Welcome to the 208th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Thanks for listening. So this past weekend, our famous registered dietitian, Addie Meinert, came in, and we went to the Sarasota Vegetable Festival. Nothing better than saying vegetable festival. We had a booth there. I was on the physician speaker panel, as well as I had two people on the success story panel. So we'll get into that shortly. Kind of our usual update. Triathlon season has entered. Back in the pool. I was in for 3,500 yards this morning. Felt good. Getting my feel for the water back. It's funny. I heard someone mention that, you know, swimming was just the shortest part of an Ironman, and not, you know, no need to worry. You could just get through that and go from there. But you actually burn quite a lot of calories, and you can expend a lot of energy, especially if you're not fluid in the water. You know, I think swimming is a lot like golf in that, swinging hard at a golf ball will not make it go further. It usually just makes you messed up. You have to have the right mechanics and the right movements to be able to swing smoothly and have the ball sail in the right direction. Same thing is for swimming. If your mechanics are off, or you have no mechanics, you're going to exert a lot more energy just trying to stay afloat. And, you know, if your legs are dragging, you're dragging your body, and there's so much more effort when you're dragging as opposed to floating and being fluid in the water. And it takes a while to develop it. My first Ironman, I actually trained for the most part in an endless pool, which is a current-driven pool. And it was Florida Ironman, and I got through the swim, and, you know, mainly I got through the swim because it was so crowded and there was so much body contact that there wasn't a lot of fluid swimming, you know, so you take three or four strokes and you'd sight, and three or four strokes and you sight. But I had been in enough other shorter races that the sighting wasn't, too bad, and I got through that. But I've seen a lot of improvement in my swimming since joining Masters swim groups. Not only are you pushed beyond what you would do yourself, but you're given instruction by coaches, and you just, you know, with anything else, the more time in the water, seeing other people and how they move in the water, you actually develop the mechanics better. And it's always just like a golf swing. You know, I grew up golfing and had a pretty good golf swing, but some days are better than the other. And the same way with swimming, some days are better than the other as far as your feel for the water and your fluidity. You can always improve something, and some days it just comes down to, you know, focusing on one or two things to try to get better. But it takes time, and it's certainly by no stretch of the imagination, easy to do 2.4 miles, and come out of the water feeling good enough to go ahead and ride 112, 116 miles, depending on the course, and then run a marathon. So, you know, if you're out there thinking about doing an Ironman, don't poo-poo that swim just because it's only 2.4 miles. It does truly mean something. And, besides being comfortable in the water and being tackled and swum over and all those other things. So, it is one of the areas where people can get in trouble, and it can start out by starts the process out of a very long day, I would say. But anyway, I'm back in the water and enjoying it. I've also been doing some cold exposure trainings, and you might wonder how I do this in Florida since it's getting hotter. The humidity is back here in full force, and we're getting up into the high 80s, and the lows are in the high 70s, you know, the last couple of days. But I've been doing some cold shower to try to get, used to tolerating something uncomfortable, incorporating with a breathing pattern, a little bit of Wim Hof breathing, if you haven't looked into him in Iceman, but also just kind of focusing more on taking effective breaths and getting used to uncomfortable temperatures, possibly decrease inflammation a little bit. But it's also helped me with, you know, not dreading to get in the water as much as far as, you know, again, it's warming up. The water was actually hotter than my shower today. So not as big a problem, but I'm enjoying the benefits of doing some of this cold water exposure. I think it's good for general decrease in inflammation. Back on the bike, I do a Zwift during the week and then on the road on the weekends. So, you know, you have to get your bike legs back as well, continuing the running, starting to go back and do the weights again. So kind of finished with my Mendocino Ultra taper or reverse taper and starting to get back in action as far as that goes. It is hot, as I mentioned, in Florida, so the backyard garden is still hanging on. Tomato plants everywhere, pepper plants everywhere, blooming guavas, blooming persimmon. I don't think the persimmons are going to make it. The mangoes are still hanging on. We've had some wind. They're falling off a little bit, but enjoying tropical fruits. Got to see and talk to some people up at the Veg Fest about tips of growing fruit trees in Florida. So that was all good. It's education in of itself, learning how best to take care of your fruit trees in an organic manner so that they can do good. We have some banana trees that are starting to take off. And, a little herb garden still going. I have white potatoes that are doing really well. So it's all a process and, enjoy getting in the backyard and working as far as one of my stress relievers as well. Our book is getting really, really close. We just have a few last minute things to do before we upload that and get a first copy up. So I'll keep you posted about that. It will be available on Amazon. So you can, we'll let you know when that's available. We're really happy and excited. A plant-based wellness cookbook, the doctor, the dietitian, and the diva. I think that's really going to be exciting to get that and share the recipes that we use in our nutrition classes and recipes that are near and dear to us from a family and our kind of go-to recipes over the years since we've become plant-based. They're tailored to not be real difficult. You don't have to go looking all over the world for ingredients. They don't take hours and hours to make. There are a couple more complicated recipes, but for the most part, they're all very easy recipes that you can make yourself and then even alter them to make them your own. So I encourage you to take a look at that and do it. We don't do a lot of really high calorie things in the cookbook a variety of colors and fair amount of fiber. Emphasis on, the emphasis of the cookbook is on, not only tasting good, being able to get on the table good, but also being of high nutritional value. So look forward to getting that out and doing that release. It's going to be really exciting. Certainly have, I think I'll have the dietitian and the diva on the podcast when we do the release. I think that'll be a lot of fun. I think we can get the diva talking a little bit on the podcast. I think she'll enjoy that. So we went to the Veg Fest. This was the Sarasota second Veg Fest that they've had. And it was bigger than last year. It was a very nice day, warm day, but a very, very nice day. We had a tent. It's again, Wallace, I was on the physician's speakers panel. I think it's always interesting to see who goes to a Veg Fest. Originally Veg Fests were more towards the vegan movement, focusing on, decreasing our consumption of animal products, hopefully eliminating our consumption of animal products and bringing attention and awareness to the impact that animal agriculture has on our environment. And so certainly I think the Humane Society and Sea Shepherd was there and other farm sanctuaries and rescue organizations were there because I think that really brings people to the table. Domestic dog and cat rescue, there was a rabbit rescue. People see that and then they see the farm animals and all of a sudden you start to connect the dots, realizing that, farm animals are people too and want to be loved and, deserve to have a happy and humane life. And we don't need to eat them to get our nutrients. So it certainly brings those people to the, you know, the Veg Fest first. And then, you know, they drag their friends. And so there's that movement. Over the last couple of years, there's been, you know, more plant-based nutrition, and the health benefits of becoming plant-based have started to also have a place at the Veg Fest, which I think is great. Because, you know, again, it doesn't do a movement. We can't save the animals if the humans are sick. And if the humans are becoming sick because they're not eating animals, or so people would think because they're not eating animals, then, you know, that's not going to help out. It's sad, but we humans often think, you know, what's in it for me? And, you know, some of the quickest ways people become vegan is if there's a vegan substitute. People are worried about missing out or having to give up something. So I think we need to, you know, the quicker we can get beyond that, the better. Because when it comes to health, the reason why we're giving something up is because it made us sick. So finding a substitute that's just vegan for something that made us sick or unhealthy in the first place is not really what it's all about, especially, you know, when I look at it from a health perspective. So if I take a, you know, a burger that has all the same amount of saturated fat as a regular hamburger, it's not helping me as a human to live better. It's certainly helping the animals, but it's not helping me as a human. And we really need to get our health crisis under control in this world, as far as, you know, heart disease is our number one killer, with 600,000 people dying each year. So I think as soon as you can get beyond trying to find substitute for things that make people make you sick, the better it is. So, you know, I had a couple in today, and the husband actually just enjoys eating broccoli made to look like broccoli, and, you know, a potato like potato, and beans like beans. He doesn't want them in a casserole. He doesn't want them mixed up. He doesn't want a sauce on them. And his wife thought that was actually harder to do, but she really hadn't had that conversation with him. She thought he was hard to cook for. But when she heard him vocalize that he just wanted things simple, in reality, it made it a lot easier for her, because she was trying to come up with all these complicated recipes to make these special dishes for him. And he was perfectly fine with just the plain vegetables and potatoes and things looking like they do naturally. And, you know, often when we start, you know, making something out of nothing, so to speak, you know, that's when we start to get in trouble. You know, long time ago, somebody was really excited when I was working at another organization. They came out, it's like, oh, here's a recipe for a vegan cheesecake. Well, the reality of it is it had the same amount of saturated fat and same calorie content as regular cheesecake. So it's not like that was something that I wanted to do to become healthy. Again, cheesecake is not healthy when it's made with dairy, and it's not really healthy when it's made with a bunch of nuts either. So anyway, so you have a lot of people that come to the Veg Fest that, you know, more for the animals, some from the environment. And then, you know, a lot of people come to see, they like crafts and different things like that. There was a fruit stand, you know, with trees, a couple of those. That was very interesting. People interested in agriculture. Of course, there were food vendors, some more healthy than others, some kombucha stations, which were good, some plant-based ice cream, which was good, and some different ethnic. There was Jamaican and Indian food, and so it's always good to be able to try new things. And even if it's not the most healthy, I think one of the great things about the Vegetable Fest is that you can see those food and those spices and then go home and make it so that it's more healthy, and so you're learning about those different spices. We had some great Indian food that had some really good spice to it, and, you know, it's like, so how can we make this just a little bit healthier, you know, and go from there. They had some vegan naan. You know, of course, if you go out, naan is traditionally made with, you know, with butter or ghee and dairy. So you can do a vegan version of it. So it's, you know, I think that opened people's eyes up that, hey, there's a vegan version of naan. Oils in bread oil in bread is just to extend shelf life. It has nothing to do with the quality of bread. Everybody gets, you know, like, oh, I can't make that without oil. But really you can. It just extends the shelf life more, so you just don't need to do that. You can freeze it, keep it in the refrigerator. But you don't need oil to make bread. You need yeast and water. So, you know, I think it brings awareness. So if you go out and you see something, it's like, this is not really as healthy as I would like it. How can I make this more healthy for me where I am in my stage of the plant-based journey? The population was younger. I would say that the age of the population was, average age, high 30s to mid, low to mid 40s was the age of the population at the Sarasota Veg Fest. That is not the age, average age of the people in Sarasota. It's an older community. It's a little bit younger than some of the other surrounding communities on the west coast of Florida, but it's still by far not the traditional Sarasota group. And it was definitely a different population than what you would see on the beach. Sarasota is known for Siesta Key Beach, which is, one of the most beautiful beaches. It's one of the top 10, if not in the country, as far as beautiful beaches with really white, sugary type sand. But you didn't see a lot of people that you would think were, beachgoers there. It was great. There was a great turnout. I would hope that in the future we would get a more diverse population. It was great that people came up to the tent, our tent, and said, hey, my friend said I should come here and speak to you since you're going to be at the Veg Fest and listen to you speak about the health benefits of being plant-based. So I thought that was good, that people actually came looking for a better way or a solution to become healthier. So that was very good. And when we did the physicians panel, there was an endocrinologist and a pediatrician, myself as a cardiologist, a radiation oncologist, and a pharmacist. And the moderator asked us each a question on how plant-based nutrition pertained to our specialty, and we were given 5 minutes to answer that question. We were given 5 minutes to answer, the mechanisms of disease and how plant-based medicine, reverses that and what we do in our practice. Somebody asked, where we were located and what we did in our practice to spread the message, not only to people with health issues, but to other physicians. And, I think that topic is... everybody would like their doctor to be more aware of nutrition, and the excuse is always out there, we didn't get any education. We didn't get any nutrition education in our medical school. I'm still of the viewpoint that there's so much to learn in medical school that nutrition is something that you need to learn in residency and after, because you just have to get the basics down first. Back to swimming. You really need to learn freestyle before you start doing the butterfly. And I think that the basics of nutrition should be taught, and maybe a little bit more. But if we as physicians need to be able to take care of sick people, and then back our way down to keeping people well. And so that is more in the clinical years, I believe, that, how do we, in outpatient settings, how do we keep people healthy? How do you practice that in your medical practice? If I would say anything is missing in training, it is what to do in a medical practice. We, as medical students, as residents, as fellows, we would go to what you call a clinic, which would be a outpatient setting located in a hospital to take care of patients that would come to the university. But we were never really, we would see patient after patient, in succession and take care of their notes and take care of them and review the case. But it was never in a setting of how would you do this in private practice? How would you go about setting up a medical practice so that you could do what you wanted with the focus you wanted to help people? And I think that would be important to have probably more during residency, so that's actually put in practice. And so in order to do that, we need to get medical practices focusing on nutrition. And, you know, I think that I'm so fortunate to have a registered dietitian working with me to help me. I love to cook. I'm very interested in nutrition, so I like to talk about it. So I actually like doing the nutrition classes that we have in our office. I have the help of my staff to prep the food. So I just get the glory of making it in front of them, and then having a discussion about the benefits and a scientific discussion during the nutrition class. If you're not comfortable, if a physician's not comfortable, that's certainly, a registered dietitian could do that role, and they could do more of the talk on the scientific aspect of it. But I think that this is a great model to try to spread to other physicians. And it's slowly catching on, in our community. People are starting to see patients get better, and they're wondering what was going on. The funniest thing that happened last week was I did have a patient in the hospital. It was 95 years old, that she had some chest pain. And I stuck my head into the doctor's dictation room to say hi to a physician I hadn't seen for a long time. And he asked me if I was back. And he didn't mean back from vacation. He meant that, did I quit doing, what I was doing as an outpatient? And now am I going to be back in the hospital like I used to be, spending hours a day taking care of people in the hospital? And it's like, no, I'm just visiting, because taking care of patients through plant-based nutrition, I don't have people go into the hospitals very often. And that concept is just beyond, what most physicians could fathom. And it'd make life a lot easier, but you can't see 40 patients as a primary care doctor and adequately educate them. So we have to start changing the way we focus on taking care of people. And, it can't all be about the volume. It's got to be about the quality and not the quantity. And until that happens and people start paying with their own dollars for good service, as long as insurance companies pay for bad care, then it's probably not going to change very quickly. I also got to be a part of and bring people for the success stories as far as how does plant-based nutrition improve your quality of life. I brought the Berry family from my practice, and obviously they'll let me use their name because they were glad to share it. But the Berry family is unique but very special in that they, all for one and one for all to make sure that they're all eating healthy. Donna Berry is the cook of the family for the most part, and she's taking, chef-level courses to be able to prepare plant food. She has an interest in cooking, so she makes beautiful, creative food. Her husband's on board. He's lost weight. Donna's inflammation has gone down, as well as her cholesterol. And most importantly, Chris's mom, Sally. When I first met her, she had just had a bypass and a valve replaced, and she was walking with a walker. She had autonomic neuropathy from her adult onset diabetes, her type 1 diabetes. And that's all gotten better, and now she's doing yoga, and she's doing some traveling. And, it was nice to see her share her story. She didn't know, we didn't know what to expect, but she was on the panel and they asked questions, and she shared, quite eloquently her story and her appreciation for her family, how they've helped her to eat better. And, through the love of food and love of family, they're all very, very healthy. And I got to present my mom, very biased. She did not know that she was going to have to speak publicly. She did not want. She's the diva. She did not. She wouldn't have gone up there had she known that was going to happen, probably. But she's very honest and open. And, my mom had lymphoma, and that's when she went plant-based during her chemotherapy. And she wasn't sure that she would be able to refine her cooking anymore, but she did. And she's a fighter, and she wanted to give things her best shot. And she sailed through chemotherapy and has been cancer-free. Her gastroesophageal reflux is improved, and her medications are all-time lows. So it's nice to see people that you know, of any age. There was a 10-year-old girl on the panel that, you know, she'd been vegan all her life and talked about, you know, how her sisters cooked for her. There was another guy on the panel that had had a heart attack and had reversed his, you know, disease and come back and is back running. Another guy that had, you know, had a near miss that changed, you know, changed his nutrition. So I think it was good to hear from real live people that it works. It's not just something a physician says you should do. And they were, you know, all able to do it and happy to do it and talked about the food that they liked. So I thought it was a really, really good panel. At our tent, Addie was there, and a friend of mine, Linda, and my mom was there, the diva, and Michael was there. And so we were able to, you know, speak with people. We had carrot cake cookies and cowboy caviar to give out to people, as well as some brochures and some books that we had to sell. And, you know, it was a great day to interact with people. Probably the most, you know, a lot of people came and they were plant-based and they were just happy. And they would say, oh, you're in Port Charlotte, it's so far away. But, you know, the reality of it is where this vegetable festival was where my daughter went to high school. So every day I made this trip from Port Charlotte to, you know, the same exit as this Veg Fest. And so it's not that far of a drive. People just kind of get stuck in their own corner. And, you know, you think about having to have a doctor that you have to go to see very often. But the reality of it is, if you're healthy and you get set up with the nutrition classes and you're doing really well, you don't have to come sit in the doctor's office all the time. And you shouldn't have to sit in the doctor's office and wait. So it's a whole different concept that, you know, we're trying to showcase that, you know, we want people to be healthy and well and be active, whether they want to climb a mountain, go hiking for the summer, run a marathon, do an ultra, do a triathlon, go on a safari. We have patients getting ready to go on a safari in August, or they just want to get off their medications. That's what we're all about, and some of it can be done on the phone. Some of it can be done in person, but we have people to support. You know, you have a registered dietitian and a nurse and myself that's always there, to help in the nutrition classes, to help keep you accountable and to educate and to support and to get feedback. And so, you know, we're dedicated to helping people achieve those goals through plant-based nutrition. And, you know, quickly they see that's the best way to go. So a lot of people came by the booth to talk about that. The most difficult lady came by, she was keto. And obviously she'd been keto for 6 months. Had it been working great, she wouldn't be at the Veg Fest. And nor did she look like it was really working great. And, you know, she said, well, I'd like to do it, but I, you know, I'm keto, and I don't think you can do a keto diet being, you know, plant-based. And if, you know, the first thing I said, you know, a keto diet carries an increased risk of cancer. And she said, no, those studies aren't right. And, you know, we talked a little bit about what she ate. And of course, you know, she said she ate vegetables, and she said she, you know, ate mainly fish, but then she also ate bacon. And I really wondered, you know, she hadn't had bread in 6 months and, you know, any kind of starches for 6 months. And I think a lot of people get confused about what the ketogenic diet is. And truly, it's less than 5% of the calories come from carbohydrates. And that means carbohydrates such as, you know, kale or anything with fiber, fruits, vegetables. And so that 5% of calories is about somewhere around 30 grams of carbohydrate a day. So if you were on a 2,000 calorie diet, like, you know, people in the boxes usually say based on a 2,000 calorie diet, then that means that about 100 calories or 5% would come from carbohydrates. So that would be an apple. So one apple and the rest meat products. It could be 4 cups of broccoli. 4 cups of broccoli would get you 9 to 10 grams of fiber, because one of the biggest things that's missing on a ketogenic diet is fiber. So you're going to select for gut microbes that are very inflammatory. You're going to increase your risk of cancer based on that. We know that a high fiber diet decreases the risk of all kinds of cancers. We talked about last week, but it also will lower your cholesterol, make you regular, feed your good gut microbes, decrease your risk of heart attack and stroke. So by not getting that 50 to 70 grams of fiber in, you right then and there, that tells you that the ketogenic diet is not going to be healthy. We know the countries that do the best have a high fiber diet. End of story. So 4 cups of broccoli, kale would be 8 to 10 cups of kale, which is about 10 grams of fiber. That's about as good as it gets. Most leafy vegetables, you can get 10 grams of fiber for 100 calories. But anything else, you know, that obviously people aren't allowed to have fruit on a ketogenic diet because they don't want carbohydrates. They want you to make ketone bodies and these short-chain fatty acids is what they want you to be making. And you can if you have a source of carbs. So there's no way you can stick to that. Just the constipation factor alone, there's just no way people can maintain that for any length of time. And the risk is you know, so great, you know, to get the rest of your nutrients in. You know, if you look at a cup of carrots, it's 52 calories. So you could have 2 cups of carrots. It gets you 8 grams of fiber. You have 4 medium-sized tomatoes with 4 grams of fiber. It's crazy when you think about it, how limiting it is. It's not going to be of any color. Your antioxidants and phytonutrients are going to be at all time low. Cholesterol is going to be high. So there's just, you know, I guess if somebody said they're keto, you'd ask them, you know, so where do you get your fiber? How do you possibly do that? I guess you could eat sawdust, 50 grams of sawdust a day. I'm not sure what that would do along with all that fatty meat, but it's just really, really, really scary. The other thing happens with a, you know, high carbohydrate vegetable and fruit diet is that you get so much more hydration. I've had people come to me and it's like, I think I need to eat more fat because my skin is dry. Your skin's not dry because you're missing fat. Your skin is dry because of hydration. And so these people are, you know, they're not getting, again, that's another thing that leads to their constipation. During the speaker's panel, you know, one of the things that, you know, was enlightening to me was, the endocrinologist talked about Hashimoto's thyroiditis, and he really has had some success with reversing it if we've caught in the first couple of years. You know, most of the time, by the time we get a hold of people with hypothyroidism, they've been hypothyroid for a long time, especially from a cardiology view. You know, people come with coronary artery disease, and typically the first thing that happens is in their 30s, they get hypothyroid, and then they get diabetes and high blood pressure, and then the coronary artery disease starts. And some of it's thought secondary to Hashimoto's, and some of it's thought just to fatigue from, metabolic waste. But I think that, yet another reason for us to focus on the younger population, especially women in their 30s that are overweight, they're very much at risk that are eating dairy and high fatty foods and an inflammatory diet. They're very much at risk for Hashimoto's thyroiditis, and it can be completely avoided and you can save your thyroid. So, you know, I think that, you know, we talk about, well, weight shouldn't matter, but it is very important metabolically that, you know, increased adipose is very metabolically active and very metabolically draining as far as the thyroid and the pancreas goes and fatty liver infiltration. So, you know, not only can you save yourself from cancer and diabetes and heart disease, but there is an extreme potential to save yourself from, being hypothyroid. That does not mean that if you're plant-based, you should stop taking your thyroid medication. You know, you need to work with your physician and get your numbers measured. I think a lot of times people are over-medicated with thyroid medication because they just check a thyroid-stimulating hormone and start them on it without measuring T4s and T3s, thyroid hormones. And as a note, I have seen some people that were very plant-based and strict low sodium, not taking in any iodinized salt that became hypothyroid or mildly clinically hypothyroid, and we needed to get them a dose of a source of iodine. So, you know, I like to have people do a sheet of nori a week, you know, on a salad, make a seaweed salad or some sushi, kelp flakes, dulse powder, kombu when you make your vegetables. These sea vegetables will provide a source of iodine. Small amounts of iodinized salt. You don't need much. Quarter teaspoon throughout the week will pretty much get it for you with these other sources. So, you know, it is something to be aware of. It's not something to fear, but it is something to be aware of to make sure you're eating an adequate diet. We like to make the, chickpea salad with some dulsa flakes or kelp powder in it that gives it a, you know, somewhat of a tuna fish type of familiarity, so to speak. But again, my favorite way is the nori wraps, the nori sheets, either to make a sushi or to make a sushi salad. The other thing that came up on the question and answer part of the panel, you know, people are still really attached to oil. You know, whether it's olive oil or coconut oil, the two oils that people seem to be most attached to, you know, because of the Mediterranean study. And again, there is really not a Mediterranean diet, and they do not douse everything in oils. And you know, it's very inflammatory. It's very acid provoking. So, you know, my number one reason for eliminating oils was because of my gastroesophageal reflux and indigestion. When I got rid of oil, it completely went away. I have other patients when they got rid of oil, their joint pain completely got away. Of course, endothelial reactivity is impaired by free oils, so blood pressure is going to drop, vascular inflammation is going to drop. And it's not just cooking with oils, but you have to start looking in the food because, you know, the labels that will be spread out in two or three different places. You know, palm oil in particular is a preservative, gives things a texture, increased shelf life. It's very damaging to the environment when they cut down all these palm, you know, and deforestations to get this palm oil that's in everything. You know, look at anything on the shelf, any kind of baked good or vegan cookie or, you know, breads. It's just this palm oil, cereals, granola. So stay away from the stuff. If nothing else, then to help save the environment, stay away from the palm oil. Coconut oil is, again, not needed. It's mainly saturated. You can put it on your skin, but it's not to be ingested or not to be cooked with because it's just not going to help you. And the oils, I mean, they really lead to, especially in people that their livers are really good at making cholesterol, and they'll take that plant fat and turn it into cholesterol. And, you know, just the inflammation goes around it. So don't get stuck on your oil. And that also means nuts, you know, nuts and seeds. People that consume a lot of nuts and seeds, those are 80% fat. And, you know, your body's going to make them, break them down to oil. Yeah, you get a little bit of fiber associated with them. But, you know, if people start snacking on those as a means to fill them up instead of doing, you know, vegetables and fiber and plants and fruits, you're going to get in trouble, both with a weight aspect and a cholesterol aspect. So don't use a little flax, chia, hemp seed to get your omega-3s. But don't overdo it as that being your number one snack food. You know, again, it was great to spend the day outside in sunny Florida and see all the great things that were around, people with their dogs, different plants and fruits and different foods and vendors and people making soaps and doing crafts and being happy, people interested in their health, being active, kids of all age. So I look forward to doing more Veg Fest. I think, you know, they're one of my favorite things to do, along with Addie. And so if you have a Veg Fest in your area and you're interested in us coming to see you someday, you know, give us a shout out. I'd love to come and visit you wherever you are at your Veg Fest. And if you don't have a Veg Fest in your town, maybe think about starting one, even if it's, you know, just an information booth at your local farmer's market this summer to help bring some awareness to what you can do with all kinds of fruits and vegetables. And, you know, I've encouraged you to try something new, whether it's a new food or new fruit, especially this summer that, you know, a lot of fruit are coming into season. Try something new. Try a different tropical fruit. It's not the fruit that's going to hurt you. It's the other things. It's the oils. It's the processed foods. So, you know, eat your food, get your fiber, get your color, try some new foods, get out and get some sunshine. This is a great time of year. Get moving, try something different. And I look forward to speaking with you next time. Please check out our website at drdulaney.com. It's drdulaney.com. Email me at Jamie, J-A-M-I, at drdulaney.com. We also have a link if you don't want to cook or you travel to mamasez.com. It's mamasez.com. We're working with them to do a sports bundle. So if you're an athlete that wants to train for an event, but you're not a great cook, but you want to be plant-based, low oil, have great recovery, check out our sports package with Mama Says. That'll get you going. Sometimes it's good just to have some of the meals in the freezer so you can pull something out when you're busy on a training big heavy training weekend. If you'd like to have some input with us to get your training going, I think that, you know, nutrition is certainly the fourth component to triathlon, but it's the second component to a lot of other sports. You have to recover from your sports, whether it's powerlifting, tennis, golf, hiking. So if you'd like some help getting ready for your travels this summer, you have a wedding or a safari or whatever it is you have to do, and you'd like us to help you get healthy through plant-based nutrition, we'd love to hear from you. So give us a shout. We can work with you no matter where you are. And you know, be plant strong. Eat your vegetables, eat your fruit, and I'll speak with you next week.